Hello and welcome to My PT Podcast, the podcast dedicated to providing insight and encouragement to the rehabilitation professional, and boy, do we need that now. In this episode, I am joined by Adam Fujita and Scott Hadley. Both are physical therapists and both have cash-based practices. And we discuss the lessons learned from COVID, both personal and also for their practice. We also take a dive into how rehabilitation and physical therapy are going to be changed, mostly for the better due to COVID. And lastly, we brainstorm projections on when the patient levels and our busyness levels will return to, I don't know if it's normal is the right word, but close to what they were prior to COVID. So hope you enjoy the podcast and thanks for tuning in. Two-prong focus today. I want to kind of look back of kind of your experience of the COVID-19 crisis, how it's affected you, what's been going on, and then kind of looking forward, how do you think it's going to affect you personally, but also your practice, what's going to be the same, what's going to be better, what's going to be worse, that type of focus. So kind of a looking back focus first and then a looking forward focus. So, but I guess I just wanted to start with the fact that I was just so shocked by how much people responded to a little video I did about kind of how we're not essential anymore. And just the stories that I heard of home health, outpatient, hospital therapists reaching out saying, yeah, how weird it was and how difficult it was to kind of handle that situation. So I guess I wanted to open up to you guys to kind of tell your story of emotionally, mentally, practice-wise, however direction you want to take it, the first 3-4 weeks of COVID. And Adam, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, personally, I'm an introvert and a bit of a hermit at times. So having certain restrictions, save going to a coffee shop and writing or reading or hanging out and doing things like that, it wasn't that grand of a disruption to that type of life. Myself personally, having said that, it does kind of, after a while, it's nice to be able to want to get out, but still not. But professionally, a lot of, you know, the majority of my business is done over the computer and remotely. So, there are some retainer clients or clients that I've had from years prior that, I'd be able to meet up with, and I haven't. So I've lost some of that. It was initially not too much of an effect, but I'm losing my thought process. So your main focus of the question was?
Just your initial experience emotionally and practice-wise the first 3-4 weeks of COVID-19.
It was a little challenging to hear of because I have a little bit more of a unique situation. Like I said, the remote work that I do isn't necessarily affected by the isolation. But talking with obviously clients and other friends, it kind of had it was a bit of a blow. So you just kind of the collective ache of, I'm hit a bit and other people are hit quite tremendously. So that was, of course, the trueness of saying people saying that your work and your craft is non-essential can kind of be a little bit of a hard hit. I mean, if I do have someone that has more of my angle is bothering me with this type of activity, you can see that. But when you have the unrelenting disc desiccation or whatever, somebody that their true, you know, activities of daily living are remarkably unbearable. And to say that it's non-essential to help them out, that calls into question of what people think of the profession or what needs to be provided for, for life or whatnot.
And Scott, what was kind of what were your first couple of weeks looking like as, I mean, you have a very busy practice, you know, I think you said you had like a 30 to 35 visits a week. What did that look like? And for you, the first couple of weeks?
I think initially I had the response that a lot of people had where it was pretty much a fear response.
Okay.
You know, like what is this thing? Is it going to kill half of the population? What's it, you know? what is this? So, you know, I was following closely the APTA's recommendations. And, you know, initially they said kind of a gray area. If you feel like you can do this safely, then do it. And so that was my plan. And that whole first week, I half of my people did cancel after the initial shutdown. And so I think that first week I had maybe 16 or 18 visits on my schedule instead of 35. And then that week, I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday, I saw a client of mine. And he called me over the weekend and said, hey, my wife was exposed to somebody who is sick and they think it's COVID-19. So, you know, I did the whole generational thing, like, okay, I'm like third down the line, but I don't know. So I canceled all my appointments for the following week.
Good for you. Brave move.
And then I got the phone call from the guy and he said, hey, her coworker turned out to test negative. So that was a good thing. I mean, you know, I had kind of a forced vacation, which I probably needed.
Right.
So then I was faced with a dilemma because a lot of my clients are essential workers. I have three or four physicians and a nurse practitioner and a few business owners that were considered essential workers. Even though I've always fought against this concept of seeing somebody long term, there are a handful of people that have become dependent on seeing me once a week. You know, even though I teach them what to do on their own, they have this impression that I do it better. So, and they, you know, and they want to pay me $130 to do it for them. So a few of them really talked me into seeing them. And so I've been seeing them consistently. And it, you know, it scares me a little bit to say that because I don't know what the ramifications are. But, you know, I do know that PT, if it's practiced in a large gym sort of setting, that's not necessarily the safest way to operate right now. And, you know, so places like the YMCA have been closed down, and big operations of PT where they have six or eight people in a large gym area.
Mm-hmm.
One-on-one treatment, I justified it, you know, like this. Okay, if we can wear a mask, that's fine. I'm happy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a group smaller than 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
So practically speaking, that has never been banned. So I've still continued to see people one-on-one. And I have avoided taking any new patients.
Okay.
Especially if it's upper extremity or neck. So, you know, a lot of the people that I have still been seeing, I'm working on their feet or their legs or something like that, where we can still maintain actually a pretty healthy social distance between our faces.
Mm-hmm.
I've been seeing roughly 15 to 18 visits a week, which, you know, I've gone back and forth between whether that's okay or not. But as a business owner, and as this is a sole source of my income, I needed to do it. And so I've found myself aligning with a lot of other business owners who have been in this mode of saying, hey, you know, those who are sick or those who are vulnerable, they can, you know, socially distance and quarantine themselves. But those who are healthy and those who need to keep working, it seems like that should be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And right. You know, I know people have taken that to the extremes and gone to Lansing with automatic rifles and stuff. You know, and
right.
I'm not in that category, but I do feel like there must be a middle way that still keeps the vulnerable people safe and still helps prevent the spread of infection. And so I find myself in a gray area.
Mm-hmm.
Very much, yeah.
Where it's like I don't feel right applying for unemployment because I still actually can earn some money.
Right.
I don't want to take out a government loan because I don't really have any employees.
Gotcha.
And if I take out a big government loan to cover this 2-month period of time, well, I have to pay that back, right?
Yeah. So that was my next question. Did you guys even apply, or is it even applicable for you? Because I know we did, and it covers employees' expenses, utilities, and rent, basically. But are you guys considered employees of your own entities that you could have taken the PPP out?
I am an S corporation, so I don't consider myself an. In terms of tax law, I'm not considered an employee. I'm self-employed, so I could apply, I think, but it wouldn't fall under that grant category where I'm
going to pay it back. Okay. Yeah. All right, Adam, is that true for you as well?
Yeah, I didn't look too much into it. I looked somewhat, but for me to look at taking out some money I don't think I would have applied or qualified for the grant either. So for me to take out another loan and then have to pay that back. And so things are running lean, but I chose not to pursue that at this time. No.
Okay. And what did you guys learn about your practice and yourself in this time? Did you learn something? Did you grow in any way? Did you add a service or anything? What? And Adam, let's start with you.
It is an interesting time to kind of reflect back on the greater truth of reality of what is my place in the world and how important is it to what I actually do. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, that's part of a lot of what my consulting is with folks in their careers or their jobs, is when there's that disconnect from it, the stuff hits the fan. Is because one of the things that I would say often is we had that zeal for us PTs. We had that zeal through college or grad school, and then you want to hit the ground running. For me, it was that pursuit of what knowledge and expertise can I grab in a hurry, or what skill set can I get my hands on and my brain into, and what can I master? Because there was always that I want to be a part of something greater, and there's some cool stuff that I could do, and there's some change that I can make. And then over the years of how it plays out in actual practice and in the real world, at some point you lose sight of that, or you forget about it, or something else comes up. And so in these moments, there's this big disruption, and then I'm just as susceptible of it, as anybody else. Does it really matter even what I'm doing? But that's kind of the whole thing. It does matter. It does. If you start comparing it, apples to oranges or whatever the saying is, I'm not on the front lines saving lives. That doesn't take away any of the value or merit of what I'm actually doing. It's the same thing when people come in and, I have, my subacromial impingement from playing with my kids. It's not a big deal. You have people that have sleepless nights because they have paresthesias and paresis down their right leg or something. So I'm really not that bad off. Yeah, but it's still important for you to get out and play with your... it still matters, the connection that you have with your son, if you really want to look at it. Mm-hmm. So it does create that stress or call into question, but you look at not necessarily what results I'm producing, but what I'm actually participating in, and that's people's health or people's understanding and of their career and their own life aspects. Instead of looking at what is the end result, it's just, what am I doing in this moment for these people? So it was kind of the craft of it, and like we chatted before, it's just, what process am I a part of? Can I just have fun with this gift that I have and just share that? Mm-hmm. So it's trying to reconnect to that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, things like this definitely call into question, say, what does it matter? Mm-hmm. A lot of people, when they would, or not a lot, it's the clients that would contact and I'd work with, that's the question that comes up when they're looking for that career consulting. And when you have a major disruption like a pandemic, mm-hmm. a lot more people are asking the question.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then, the fear-based is that's cool that you could help me with that, but I'm not working right now. So.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Scott? What did you learn about yourself or your particular practice that COVID-19 forced you into?
Well, one thing that became really obvious to me during the first week was that I was thoroughly surprised at how fragile our economy is. You know?
Oh boy.
Just after 1 week of a shutdown, businesses are talking about not being able to reopen.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I, as the shutdown happened, I was looking at my own books and saying, okay, I guess I could survive this for about 6 weeks, but then I'll be out of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that really scared me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've spent the past...
Thanks for that transparency, by the way.
Yeah, it's well, you know,
not easy to say.
I've made quite a bit of money in the past decade, but most of that I've spent on paying back loans, on, you know, paying off mortgages, stuff like that, which is good, you know, to be out of that debt, but I don't have much saved.
I think that's probably true for a lot of PTs that are paying back debt just to get through school.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, so here I am at 49 years old thinking, wow, I should have a lot more money in the bank than this. I should have a much bigger buffer.
Yeah.
I was on target to have a great year. January and February were awesome. And it's really, really good that January and February were so good, because when March hit, you know, like Fuj said, it, like the stuff hit the fan, and I'm like wondering what's going to happen financially. So that's the first thing I learned was, okay, not only is the entire economy pretty fragile, but my personal economy is pretty fragile.
Right.
And that made me really start thinking more seriously about generating some other sources of revenue for myself. And it's something that's been on my mind a long time. You know, as a manual therapist, I'm like, you know, what if I tripped on a root while I was on a trail run and broke my wrist? You know, is that, how would that change my career?
Oh, yeah.
Scaphoid fracture.
Hand up and showed a cat.
Oh man,
that was a bike. You know, so, bicycling. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Freak accident.
So I gave up mountain biking a while ago for that very reason, because I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah, so one of the things I've been exploring and dabbling in up to this point, and even developing, is some continuing education courses, which I've taught a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think last time we talked, I was working on a website,
mm-hmm.
getting some courses approved.
Yep.
And March and April, I had three courses scheduled to teach, which got canceled. And, you know, so.
Yeah.
So what it, and one thing I always kind of balked at was like, hey, I can't teach manual therapy online. That's just not possible. These have to be in-person courses. They have to be fairly small so that I can get around to all 15 people and make sure they're doing it right or whatever. But I've really rethought that. I've had to go through the process of saying, okay, well, how would I solve this problem of teaching someone how to do this particular mobilization or this soft tissue technique? Or, you know, how could I do that? Of course it's possible. You just have to have the right video angle,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right, yeah.
You have to have the right creativity.
Yeah, you just have to be creative about it.
Yeah.
Solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has forced me into solving that problem of how to take my courses. I have three of them approved right now.
That's awesome.
Well, I need to go through the whole reapproval process to get them approved for online now.
Oh, and, it's specific.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that, you know, they won't just let me say, hey, I'm going to do these three courses online, because they all have a laboratory component.
Okay.
As they're approved right now.
Right.
So, you know, one of them is an 8-hour course, which I'm actually going to break down into three courses, all of them online. And one of those will be manual focused. The other two will be more like theoretical.
Okay.
So, the Michigan PTA says I have to actually get them reapproved.
Okay. Oh boy.
Scott,
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was interrupting. Go ahead. Keep finish your thought. Yeah.
I was just going to say, so, you know, if we talk in another 6 months from now, I might be more online like Fugis, you know, because I'm working on a whole business model just to teach online, which honestly is much more scalable than an in-person teaching. Right. I don't have to be there.
Yeah. Adam, you were going to say something?
Yeah, it was to sound with that, when you're working with somebody, so for me, instead of treating or rehabbing, I work under the auspices of preventative care or sports or run coaching. It does grant a lot of freedoms, just for convenience of people and the availability. Right now, it's still me interacting one-on-one, but we don't have at a common place, so I can be working with people, obviously remotely. Grants add a lot of freedom, but then you kind of have to be creative in what you're looking at. You know, when folks send video of their day, make sure that send in decent enough angles. But then when you want to do some testing, you kind of have to be a little bit creative in what kind of data you can and you can't collect. So, and looking at what rehab would be treating, but for me it would be just looking at inefficiencies, as I would call it. You do have to get a bit creative with that. And then for the first part of Scott's response with that, I mean, because I feel too with the scared of how fragile the economy is, the one of the first things I thought of, and in a completely different scenario, because Scott and I are both in West Michigan, I can't remember however many years ago, but there was that one third party, there's that one insurance company that decided to cap the visit at $75 a visit.
Yeah.
And we had, at the clinic I was working at the time, we kind of started running numbers and we're starting to be curious of, you know, we do one-on-one care through the duration, or at the time we saw patients one-on-one TT to patients, and to be able to continue to afford that care, if one more major company, you know, third-party payer did that, we would have been. And
oh no, did we lose Adam?
Oh, no, his face is still there.
Yeah, his face is there. Maybe he'll come back. Oh shoot.
Well, I'll fill in the gap because I know what he's talking about.
Okay.
You know, the day rate that was issued maybe back 7-8 years ago by a couple different insurance companies, and it was really in response to abuse that a lot of PTs were you know, overbilling. You know, so they'd stick somebody on a bike for 15 minutes, walk away, and then bill for TheraX.
Gotcha.
And then they'd give them ultrasound, they'd give them a hot pack, and they'd give them some e-stim, all separate charges, right?
Right.
And then, you know, then some more exercise, and then maybe a little bit of manual therapy. So, you know, with very little skilled treatment, they were able to bill, you know, $180 or $200 per visit. And the insurance company started saying, hey, wait a minute. You know, a technician or a PTA is doing most of this.
Right.
Why are we paying the PT bill, right?
Right, yeah.
And so then they said, okay, well, instead of that, we're just going to give you $70 per visit, or 75, depending on the insurance company,
okay,
regardless of what you do.
Gotcha.
So if you wanted to stick them on a bike and stick them on a hot pack and ultrasound, fine, you get $70. But for the
there he is.
Hey. But for, you know, hey, Fuji, I'm finishing your statement for you.
Yeah.
Oh, I heard you, I could hear you guys.
I know where going with this.
So yeah.
I'll just finish it and you can tell me if I'm right.
Yeah, right.
So, I was just giving the backstory of why these insurance companies decided to go to a day rate, because there were abuses in the system.
Yeah.
But for clinics that were really offering high quality care, like the one Fuge was in and the one I was, you know, in, like we're spending, you know, 30, 45, 60 minutes manual, hands-on, high-skilled treatment. I can't take $70 for that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You can't run a business that way.
No. And so that's actually when I started dropping insurance companies and saying, okay, a half hour treatment's $100. You know, if you want to try to submit it to your insurance, go for it. But I'm not going to bill because they're just going to send me 70.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Both of you have hit on something. I don't know. We lose Adam again. Looks like we lost Adam again.
Shoot.
About the test.
He's the best looking one here.
No kidding. Who would you need ya? I wanted to ask about telehealth. Have you thought of? I know I talked to a couple of PTs where they have instituted most of their treatments right now, obviously due to through telehealth, and they anticipate moving forward that a large percentage. One was like 30%. One was even over 50%. Would probably be telehealth. People that practice here in West Michigan. How do you think? Did you do any telehealth? Do you think you're going to dive into telehealth now, or not?
Hey, you're back.
Hey, back.
Hi. Doing IT stuff. Don't worry about me.
Okay.
So with telehealth, one of the struggles I've had is that, you know, with manual therapy, how do you do that?
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, but over the years I've developed some really effective home treatment programs. So if I'm working on someone's lumbar spine or their SI joint or, you know, their glutes or whatever, I teach them how to use a couple softballs to get into those same spots. Mm-hmm. And they can do actually some of their own mobilizations and some of their own soft tissue releases, mm-hmm. reactivating reflexes, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I try to, you know, those who have been with me a while are really good at some of that self-treatment. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, maybe they only have to, you know, maybe they come in to see me 3 or 4 times and then I show them what to do. So I think it's possible to do telehealth that way for
okay.
me, mm-hmm. where, you know, I figure out some ways to do some self-testing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of hard to do a muscle test that way, but, you know, you can figure it out with function usually.
Yeah.
And then say, okay, you know, hey, use this rolling pin, use this ball, use this foam roller. Let's explore here, work this mm-hmm. area, and then do that functional test again and see how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done that a couple times in the past month and a half.
Okay.
And both, 3 times. And all 3 of those were with people who have known me for a while.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. they kind of get the gist of, like, sure. you know,
yeah.
of where they should be working and yeah. how hard they should be working yeah. on their soleus or mm-hmm. on their glute or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing a new patient like that, I think would be a much greater challenge.
Yeah, I think they were kind of anticipating there would be a fluid balance between telehealth and in-person moving forward, not just strictly okay. one or the other.
Yes, maybe the first couple visits in person and then going to telehealth.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
in a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Adam, you had mentioned that some of your consulting is through telehealth, but have you done physical therapy as well, cash-based through telehealth?
Yeah, with the sports performance, it, like I said, you have to get a bit creative in your assessments and your treatment. Obviously, you can't put your hands on certain tissues. So if you see a certain issue with depending on if you think of the possible culprit, well, 3 of those, I need my hands. I need to know what yeah. the mobility looks like or what that restriction is. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that through the computer. Mm-hmm. We chatted, I think, a bit ago. I've done a lot of work with the thought processes from the Pastoral Restoration Institute, and they get pretty in depth of a lot of human movement mechanics, and their tests and treatments are very involved and convoluted. I wouldn't say convoluted, but they're very intricate. But with that, they've devised a certain number of testing procedures that you can glean a lot of information from about how one hip is prepared and able to accept shift in the frontal and rotational planes to accept weight. At the same time, the other leg is willing to abduct and externally rotate to allow that motion to happen. And so their testing procedures, while you would do it in a treatment room, they're very involved, but you can teach people to do that remotely with their, instead of their foot on my shoulder, you can coach them through with your words and have them do that with their leg on the, like an ottoman or on the table, and you can mm-hmm. watch it and you can coach them through a little bit and say, are you feeling a tension here? Or when you lift it up, did your trunk twist? It becomes a little bit more kind of time consuming in the testing procedure, where you could get it done a lot quicker in the clinic. You can do that. It is a bit of creative. And then some of the interventions that you look at for regaining some facilitatory activity or some inhibitory activity of whatever, like their exercises are pretty involved. And having your hands on the patient at times to see, are you co-activating this? Or are you able to perform this type of motion without your paraspinal? That you can't do, but you do what you can over the computer. So one of the beauties of it is as some of their exercises are, the strain or the effort that you have to tell them, you really don't have to try that hard. And a scale of 1 to 10, your effort to be lifting up this type of your leg should be like a 3. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be moving much. You try it at a 10, and you can feel all these muscles co-activating. Put your hand on your back. Do you feel how that's tight? Yeah. Now do it at like a 2 or a 3 and see, does that, can you do it without your back tightening up? So it just, to know what you're looking for and really know what the testing is, mm-hmm. really guide the patient being, or the client, and being an observer of sorts.
I think that's a key, Adam, and I think you've touched on it too, Scott, is how I think it causes us to be better teachers and engage the patient in being part of their own rehab, right? So it's like, yeah. instead of us just saying, put my hand on it and say, do you feel that? You're actually forcing them to feel it, them to understand, them to learn how to move or how to correctly move, you know?
Right. Yep. The success of me in the clinic, or even now, was how well they understood what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And what we were working on. So the education portion, ability to talk about just translating all of the language we would use about anterior rotated and shifted, you know, left hemipelvis causing an external rotation abducted flexed hip and an obnoxiously tight, you know, joint hip capsule and posteriorly ischiofemoral ligament. That's not going to go over well. But if you can break it down in a layman's term and show them. And so oftentimes I would be standing. I mean, you can see us because I don't know if it's audio or not. But I would stand in front of the camera and say, this is the type of motion that you see, and demonstrate. And it looks like I'm dancing in front of them. But the words, the visuals, giving them the understanding that they can have the tactile cue. The majority of my success with patients was how well I could educate them.
Yes.
Could give them a world of care, but if they couldn't follow me, they don't know what we're working on, and they just don't have a strong affect for what they're even mm-hmm. buying into. So they might not. Mm-hmm. They might not show up as much, or they might not care as much to do some corrective activity. Mm-hmm. Because my work for their next visit depends on how well they do their work in between. We're both on the hook, and what I want to do depends on you.
Right.
They show the good majority of the time that I would spend with patients.
Mm-hmm. I want to kind of switch our focus now to kind of looking ahead. My first question I wanted to ask both of you is, I think every therapist, whether they're PTOT or speech, is thinking about is, what do you anticipate the demand for rehabilitation services will be in the next 3 to 6 months? What do you think the demand will be?
I've had 3 calls this week from people who are having a surgery scheduled at the end of the month, and they want to line up their rehab.
Okay.
So, you know, one is a returning patient who had her knee replaced a year ago, and now she's getting the other one done.
Okay.
Another one, he's getting his ACL repaired. You know, so some of these surgeries that have been postponed over the past few months they're happening soon.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to rehab with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I think there, you know, there's still an obvious need for post-surgical rehab. Mm-hmm. I also, and I haven't been soliciting new patients or anything like that. So I, you know, have a great feel for this, but a lot of people have taken up new sports over the past few weeks. You know, I see so many people running who didn't run before, and I can tell they didn't run before.
Right.
They're gonna feel it if they don't already. They're gonna fall into that, you know, 70% of runners that get injured every year category.
Right.
So I think as long as we are offering a high quality service, I think we'll still have plenty of patients.
Okay.
I think the clinics that may suffer are the ones that are just kind of, you know, where a patient feels like a number.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
I see patients like this all the time. I have a patient that I had maybe a couple months ago who was being seen at a local clinic with a pretty good reputation. A lot of PTs work there. They saw her for a year doing some McKinsey exercises for an issue that was not coming from her back.
Ooh.
It used up all of her insurance visits.
Mm.
And she still, you know, she paid like $4,000 out of pocket and used up all of her PT visits and didn't get any better and probably even got worse. So clinics like that, I feel like they might suffer.
Mm.
Because I think, you know, people who decide to go back to rehab settings, they're going to want to get the most bang for their buck. They're not going to want to be there for 50 visits or even 20. You know, they're going to want to get in and out as quickly as possible. So 3, 4, 5 treatments. And I feel like the clinics that can market that and deliver on that are probably the clinics that are going to not see a huge drop in their,
okay,
in their business.
Adam, what
That's
do you,
just my guess.
Yeah. Adam, what are your thoughts on how services will, shake out in the first couple months? You think they're going to come back?
Yeah, I think there's Scott's hitting on some interesting points. I would wonder for those that are those consumers that are intentional about what they're getting into and intentional about their health and trying to educate and follow along what best practice is for their safety. I wonder if they would also shop around for not only that actual higher skill set, however you can market that, but also I wonder if people are going to look at shopping around for the smaller shop out of physical bodies in a building, or
right,
if it's a smaller clinic, are people,
yes,
looking at that as a marketing tool, or the consumer rather looking at as a product that is more appealing?
It's safer.
If I can go into a big rehab facility that has handfuls of practitioners, let alone, you know, office staff, are they going to want to shy away from that if it's just a higher volume clinic that's going to have multiple patients in a lot of open space or in a waiting room? Is it marketable for a clinic that's smaller to say, hey, we have the ability to kind of keep you safe and we can control for these variables?
Mm-hmm.
I know that doesn't tap too much on, the quality of care per se, but generally if somebody has either practice and they can sustain it,
mm-hmm,
I think they have a brain on their shoulders and they got some good skills in their hands. So I play the odds with that, but I'd wonder if they'd be asking themselves that.
That's true. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Neither did I.
I would also wonder with those types of settings, what type of PTs are going to be at what type of setting? So to look at the PTs and the workers going back, what is their sense of, these patients are actually a gift. I mean, for the fact that they're helping to, I'm earning a check with them, but they're also allowing me to practice this thing that I actually enjoy. So going back to that idea of the disruption, I'm disconnected, and then this disruption showed that I was disconnected and I was jaded or, you know, fell into that sweet hand of apathy. But now that I see that it's taken away, now I get back to it, maybe I'm more invigorated to actually care about my job or really in the patient.
I think there's a lot of PTs are going to be happy and thankful to get back to work. Go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted.
I would hope so, yeah. And so for those patients or those workers that don't necessarily see that reconnection or are still punching the clock or still having that whatever, I would wonder if that also affects the atmosphere of the building. And so over time, that would disperse out to people trying to seek out those that actually have a little bit more of an affect and a connection to their work. And by default, I mean, they could find folks.
You broke up on that last little part. What was that last part, Adam? Scott, then I'll ask you my next question. Follow-up to that is, so first was the first little bit. How do you think it's going to respond? When do you think you will get back to your pre-COVID level of number of patients per week or what you were seeing before? How long do you think that will take? Sorry, Adam, missed you there for a little bit.
How long? I wish I had a good answer for that. That would help me plan.
You and about every other PT.
Man. Like, should I buy this new decking for my back porch? Or or should I save that $1,000?
Right.
I'm still unclear as to what the governor is going to do after May 15th. Assuming the economy opens back up on May 15th and people start wanting to get out and feel comfortable doing that, I'm hoping that by mid-June I'll be back to my normal load.
Okay.
30, 35 a week.
Okay.
I'm praying that that happens.
Yeah, okay.
If it doesn't, I'm going to have to figure something out.
Continuing education.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I want to figure that out anyway.
Yeah, okay.
If the orders extend past May 15th, I don't know what's going to happen to our economy in general, let alone my own practice.
Yeah.
I worry about the economy in general.
I do too.
And, and in a cash-based practice like mine, I am dependent on other people having decent jobs.
Yes.
Because I'm charging a premium.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though they're paying less with me than they do on copays, you know, for 20 visits at another clinic, still, you know, for someone to fork out $150 or $130 per treatment, they have to really buy into it and they have to feel like they have the expendable cash.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm depending on the economy doing okay.
Mm-hmm. Adam, are you in kind of the same boat?
Yeah, that's the trick. It's people are saying, man, I just got knocked off my rear by this shutdown. I've read some of your work and I've talked with other people that work with you. I want to get connected. Have you walk me through some of this? Can you do it? I mean, it's the same thing. We have a special skill set and we need to make our income in charge, and they're saying, hey, you have something great. I can't afford necessarily. Some folks are saying, I can't afford necessarily to hook up with you. So when the state reopens, for when the government plans to, I would wonder if people are still going to be skittish to spend because, you know, I'm no epidemiologist or whatever the term is, but there's going to be another wave. And some people could say, oh, it's not going to be so bad, or some people can say it's going to be worse. Mm-hmm. And so that's the crummy thing is I kind of expect another something not good. And so, yeah, that's not a splendid thing to say, even if people have the resource to afford our sets afford our services, they might hold off because it's like, yeah, do I spend this money on my decking or do I hold off because I don't know if or when this second shutdown is going to happen.
Yeah.
And so that's the bit of the concern that you want to be aware of, but don't want to think too much about. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I mean, opening is exciting. I'm luckily right now not having to be too concerned of the one-on-one exposure to people. So just because the governor reopens the economy and businesses, that's increasing risk. And so that's tricky, especially for physical therapists and manual therapists that have to get that close to folks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. I go to other businesses right now and I can keep a distance, or I don't have to,
right.
Mm-hmm. I don't have to work on releasing something in a patient or in a person that's, you know, I'm getting my vegetables from the farm from.
Mm-hmm.
I can keep distance, but that's going to be a challenge, because then it's the mm-hmm. I need to, for folks that have to work one-on-one, I need to work with these people, but I also want to be safe for myself. But if I'm safe for myself, I might not be generating revenue for the next payment, for the next set of bills.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How do you analyze that risk?
Mm-hmm. Like,
great question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I would see that when the economy opens up again, we're gonna see another wave of whatever size, and it's not going to be grand.
I think you're right on every projection that I've seen. They anticipate some type of increase, but hopefully the valve releasing of people going back to normal activity in a graded format will help us keep below the epidemic rise. What is it, 1.1 right. or something like that? Keep it below so that we don't get to that pandemic level. But
yeah,
I guess I think this might be my last question, but so therapy, PT, OT, speech, whatever the case might be, is probably not going to be the same post-COVID as it was pre-COVID, right? And so my question to you guys is, what's going to be the same? What's going to be worse? Or in what's going to be better after COVID-19 in your practice and you acting as a physical therapist? What same, better, and worse? And Scott, why don't you go first?
I think the consistent thing for me will be that I'm not really changing my treatment approach. I'm still teaching people how to do their own home program. I'm still using the same techniques and approaches that I have always used.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't see that changing.
Okay.
One thing that might be worse, at least for a time, is the whole financial piece.
Okay.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I hope not, but it might be
mm-hmm.
worse.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I think will be better is I think there may be quite a few commercial spaces that are open for relatively low lease rates.
Okay.
I just have this premonition about that. And I'm actually at a point where I need to either renegotiate my current lease or find a different place. The landlord that I have now, my lease was done April 1st. And so, you know, I even thought about, well, maybe I should just start treating out of my house. I'm like, nah, that's not going to work. So I agreed to stay on month to month.
Okay.
Really kind of just to help him and to alleviate any pressure from me of mm-hmm. trying to find a place during this pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
but, you know, once everything opens back up, I might find another place for a lot less money.
That's true.
So that might be better.
Yeah. I think another better that you already mentioned earlier was that your opportunity to make some, it really kind of forced you into the whole arena of continuing education. You know, I think that's, you know,
I think that's going to be better for me in the long term. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm 49 and I've always wondered, like, you know, how long will I actually be able to practice with my hands? Mm-hmm. 55, 65. I really don't know.
Right.
They're fine right now.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, can't stop time, right?
No.
but teaching is something that people do until they're really old.
And you've done it before.
Yeah, and I love it. I love teaching, you know? And I feel like, and I have something novel to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Fuji actually learned some of the early steps of this stuff way back when, as I was developing these theories
Achilles and his Chiron and his stretches collected to the connected to the soleus and clavius and barum.
Yeah.
Started.
So Adam, what about you? What about what's going to be the same, better, and worse for you, physical therapy wise, post COVID?
That's great. What could be? I'll start doing the boom. What could be worse is like we've all been saying, we don't know. So people wanting to hold on to their resources, their finances, because how easy for us to put off our health or sanity, necessarily pay for those resources that could help improve.
Yep.
So I think the reluctancy for folks to pay for rehab services, coaching services, consulting services is going to be a bit, I think people are going to be
tighter.
Reluctant or just waiting to help people. Yeah. Yeah. I see opportunity. I mean, last time we chatted, and I still hold true, I have not gone into specifically marketing a rehab service. It looks minimally different in that the people, the clients, I guess I could call them patients if they were injured, but I'd still be focusing on the same mechanics and inefficiencies and restoring and working with them. It's just on the hook as healthcare, as rehabilitative services. Mm-hmm. That could possibly open up the door to either look at that for my own revenue or for folks that might be reluctant or wanting to be cautious and conservative and say, all right, the ban is lifted, but I still want to keep myself safe and I'm still not being one to have some remote rehabilitative services. So gotcha. That could be a possible. What's going to stay the same? Yeah, I don't know. I'm always going to lobby for the smaller practices of the folks that are trying to hone craft, like Scott and other folks in clinics that I work at. And I'm hoping that their attention, I'm hoping, will still be the same on their skill set and their products versus volume necessarily. Like Scott said, he's looking for creating that additional revenue stream or something outside of it or different. So you're doing the formal continuing education and going through the MPTA for your con ed stuff. Outside of the rehab, outside of the clinic, it might push forward some of the stuff that I wanted to do for running coaching.
Okay.
Making that a remote source of video, I don't know, digest or services that way, something that could be paid.
Sure.
Finishing up a book that I've been writing. So this time has allowed me to do that. Cause I've seen all authors are making bank. So that's going to be a good way.
Just don't count on a good book tour. I heard something yesterday about that. Book tours are out the window.
Right.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. Did we lose Adam again? Oh no.
Oh no.
So that was his better, right? He was going to do a book tour and maybe develop some continuing education online. That's good. Both of you are doing more of the continuing education piece. He really seems like a teacher at heart. Did you notice that when he was a clinician?
Yeah, he's always been. Yeah. When my partner and I were able to hire him, this was like in 2010, maybe.
Okay.
2009. I suggested that we get a big billboard in Grand Rapids that says, "We got food."
Yeah.
because he has always been like top tier.
And, that's high praise coming from Scott Hadley, Adam.
To see Adam Fujita wanting to go into continuing education, I mean, the guy's got brains and he's got skills, you know, and so
that's awesome. It's,
I would take that course.
Maybe you guys better team up. You get more views if you get both of you on the same website. It might be better. Feed off of each other.
Oh man, yeah.
The two BT brains. There you go. So Adam, you are on your continuing education piece for running, and also I forget what else that was. as you're better.
Yeah, just
your book.
Moving forward. Yeah, moving forward on the skill set and the appreciation I have for running mechanics and trying to translate some of that down for folks for more of an applicable thing. You have the high convoluted gate mechanics that Scott and I can make.
Uber complicated? Shoot, we're losing them again.
Dang it.
Ah, shoot.
Yeah, I think, you know, Fuge has incredible experience as a runner himself, and he's done a lot of good work with runners in terms of just correcting some simple mechanical things that need to be corrected, you know, and, you know, realigning muscle balances and things like that. And I know that that's where you were going, right, Fuge? Can you hear me?
I don't think he can.
Oh.
Shoot. Yeah, he's
we actually had this funny history of running barefoot in the Resolution Run on January 1st of 2010.
Oh my!
We ran this 4 mile race barefoot in January.
Oh. Oh.
It was ill advised. But we did it, and we both had blood blisters on all of our toes, but it was fun.
Hey, Adam.
Hey, are you back?
Hello.
Hey, all right. Yeah, I think you are.
I was just telling Devin about the Resolution Run in 2010.
Oh God, that was the mechanics in theory are grand. The actual logistical carryout in reality was a little interesting. Yeah,
yeah, right. Yeah, the feet don't like 29-degree salted roads.
Right, the salt, the chemical. Thought about that. Yeah, yeah.
Oh my goodness!
I wasn't even thinking the chemical. I was thinking the little stones in the bottom of your feet. Oh my goodness!
Well, we couldn't feel them after like a half mile.
That's right. Burn.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
Wow.
Man, we're smart. Yeah.
That works.
I finished in 32:01, and Fuge finished in 32:00.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I still remember that.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Oh man.
Well, it sounds like you really guys should hook up with the two running specialists. I'm just teasing you, but that'd be great.
Oh God. Scott's brain he went to, I actually interviewed at Wayne State's med school for the PhD program that he went through. So again, he was my anatomy professor. So he's got, you know, decades of the anatomy in his head, and then went back to grad school for his physical therapy degree. I just remember when we were chatting, I don't know if it was while I was working with you or afterwards, he says he just sleeps a handful of hours a night, then gets up, and he had things to write. His to shut off his brain was a challenge. So yeah, it's the remarkable work that he's doing for folks. It's fun. So I'm excited to hear of how the continuing ed courses are going to be from the time that I spent with you, of what the content was then, and just to see how it's developed over the past almost 11 years now. Mm-hmm. That's going to be sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
To close off here, guys, I wanted to give you each an opportunity to share your websites and contact information. And Scott, please, and both Adam, whatever ideas you had for continuing education, if you have those solidified, please take this time to tell the audience about that.
Okay. The website is neuromechanicspt.com.
Okay.
And neuromechanics, about 5 or 6 years ago, I thought I created the term. And then.
Of course you did.
But it turns out neuromechanics is a subdiscipline of biomechanics.
Okay.
And over the past several years, a lot of biomechanics departments, including the University of Michigan, have laboratories focusing on neuromechanics. Sweet. Which is the interaction of our mechanical system with the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the two are interdependent, mm-hmm. right? So nerves will activate muscles, which will move joints, and that joint movement and muscular stretch triggers the nervous system,
loops back
to respond appropriately to the movement. And so neuromechanics PT focuses on identifying neurological proprioceptive reflexes that have potentially become impaired because of faulty movement patterns.
Gotcha.
And restoring muscular flexibility or joint mobility can reactivate those neural pathways and restore recruitment to muscles that were previously inhibited.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, in some ways, food has changed quite a bit in the past decade, and in a lot of ways, it's still the same. We'll still manipulate, you know, soft tissues to restore recruitment of other muscle groups. And so, you know, but I think that the way that it's evolved is in terms of applying that to functional mechanics and being able to identify movement patterns that have become impaired because of proprioceptive impairment.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, neuromechanicspt.com.
And your
website's functional, but I'm in the process of revamping all of it because I'm taking the courses online.
Sure. And your clinic is HadleyClinic.com? Is that
HadleyClinic.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's about as bare bone of a website as you can get.
It's got like, a nice picture of you running, though. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's good. I really like it. That's
nice.
Good. No, it's tight. I've been on there. It looks good. Yeah, I don't think,
okay, well,
yeah.
Thanks. And we thank GoDaddy for that. I just followed GoDaddy.
And Adam, anything, your website and also the services you offer, can you share with that?
Yeah, sure. Theprocessperformance.com. And as much as I offer the sports performance, which is the prehab services or the sports performance services that take essentially the physical therapy skill set and mind frame and just apply it to the body's efficiencies and inefficiencies on the front end of injury or pain. So it's the same service just beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do the running coaching, which depending on what folks are looking for can also include that sports performance aspect. In addition to walking through folks on their training season, instead of me devising the 14 or 16 week training program that has been invented far better than I'd be interested in inventing, I work with the runners or the clients within whatever training program they decide, and I again add that sports performance aspect piece if they're losing those efficiencies or those enhancements, as well as looking at how to navigate the training season and races with specifically how do I work through these types of work.
Oh, no.
Oh.
We almost had it.
Oh, what happened? Oh, no.
Oh, wait.
Yeah,
you're
the there.
Performance. There you are. What was
we
your website again?
Me?
The process.
Theprocessperformance.com, right?
Theprocessperformance.com, yeah.
Theprocessperformance.
So,
okay.
Yeah. And so instead of looking at what the different, like how to train, to teach, or to work with the runners with the sports performance, the physical side, how can they mentally engage and make good decisions with their training within the programs that they've selected? And then kind of coaching them through their running mechanics and the feels like of how it actually, how do you carry out? Somebody tells me that this is a certain gait mechanic that I need to work on, but I might not necessarily know how to actually carry that into my actual gait and my actual technique. So to learn of and see how the patient moves or the client moves and actually, all right, this is the concept we're working with. Here's how we can actually make that workable for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're talking about a forward lean or if some people are trying to get off of a heel or overstride, they might be achieving 180 steps per minute, but they've completely taken away, negated the use of their hips and their knees and their ankles are just going, you know, at high revolution.
Mm-hmm.
We can work with that. So that's what the physical aspect or the physical therapy type product that I offer. And then the career life coaching and consulting that I do kind of fits good with these big disruptions of pandemic. Not that I want pandemics to keep me in business, but when somebody just realizing work is just not going the way it needs, it's causing me to see that I'm just missing on whatever that was when I started. Or somebody that's leading, a group of workers or owns their own business and just noticing the team is just stagnant or there's a lack. I look at a number of things on how to assess what that specific group or person needs. And then instead of me, here, do this, let's walk through these types of these structures, these archetypes, and have you self-explore and create your own ignition and your own discovery of what that lack or that missing is and how you can redefine what your work is.
Cool.
So that's kind neat. Of the things that I've been up to.
Yeah, that's really broad.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much, guys, for your time. Thanks, Adam, for being persistent on keeping your Wi-Fi going there. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I got to talk to IT over here.
And Scott, thanks for sitting in the hot car. I can't believe we're saying it's hot and it's May in Michigan, but appreciate that.
You got a trailhead?
I'll take it.
He asked if you were at a trailhead.
Yeah, I'm up on the Manistee. Well, I'm sorry. The North Country Trail, just south of White Cloud. Oops,
nice.
We lost it again.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both, guys. It's been a pleasure, and I'm inspired by both of you with your pursuit for continuing education and teaching, not only the public but also PTs. But it's very inspiring to hear about all that you guys are doing, and keep up the good work. And I know that both of you provide such great, valuable services to your clients and patients alike. So thank you so much for what you do and appreciate you taking the time and investing in the rehab community. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate your investment.
All right.
Devin.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Devin.
Thanks both,
appreciate
guys.
It.
Hope to see you in person sometime.